Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. Our two jam-packed. I have to be critical of LeBron for a few minutes. It's L.A., it's the Herd, and wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. Joy Taylor is joining me. I'm very pro-LeBron.
Yes.
There's a show before me, one of the people not as pro-LeBron. I am overwhelmingly pro-LeBron. Joy, I need a minute. I mean, I do this about once, twice a year. It's like, we got to be, I love Russell Wilson. But what did I say after the Seahawks went and got Gabe Jackson, Gerald Everett, new coordinator? I said, okay, Russell, they did you good. Go win games.
Yeah.
Got to be fair. I love LeBron, but we got to be fair here. So LeBron came out yesterday and raced to Twitter. He does this a lot. I'm not a huge fan, but he banged on the NBA. It was basically, without boring you, I told you so. We shouldn't have come back so soon. The players needed more rest, blah, 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 blah. So just as a matter of fact, let's talk about some of the players that have been hurt in the playoffs. I'm going to mention names. See if you have any common thread here. Nurkic in Portland, AD, Embiid, Kawhi, Kyrie, KD, Mike Conley, Chris Paul. Oh, wait, they get hurt all the time. A lot of the guys that are hurt are stars have been hurt a lot. Now, Donovan Mitchell's injury could be fatigue because they've asked so much of him, but Mike Conley's been hurt since 2013. KD hurt, AD hurt, Embiid hurt, Kawhi hurt, Kyrie hurt, Nurkic hurt. Folks, a lot of these guys are hurt all the time. Jaylen Brown of the Celtics, it was a wrist injury. That's not a fatigue injury. He banged up his wrist. You can't blame fatigue. I do think the Donovan Mitchell injury, like they've just, like if he was a pitcher, they're asking him to throw 300 innings. Like that one feels like a fatigue issue. So let's start with that. Let's slow down on every injury is the NBA's fault. Here's the second thing, though. And listen, we've all gone through this together. The NBA got a terrible break. The pandemic hit in the middle of their damn season. The NFL sat there and was like, no, I wouldn't do that. NFL had 8 months to watch everybody have to deal with this. The NBA got hosed. February, March, it's right when their season gets interesting. Pandemic. So I'm going to give them a little leeway. It's one thing if you can see something coming that's a problem. When it lands in your lap, it's really, really difficult. So the NBA, during the pandemic, they lost 50% of their audience, $1.5 billion. They were hemorrhaging money. They were hemorrhaging viewers. They hadn't solved the pandemic. Our president, our White House hadn't. Our Congress, our Senate, we couldn't get our arms around the pandemic. And it was right in the middle of it. And so the NBA's like, okay, we're losing money and audience. We got to get back to playing. We can't keep pushing this thing off. And so they had to create a slightly condensed schedule of 72 games. And by the way, they did a great job in the bubble. They had virtual fans. There was no fans there. The bubble is the best you could have done, creating a league in a tiny little community at a theme park resort. They did an unbelievable job. They didn't have a single player test positive. Even Lou Williams going to Atlanta to get chicken wings come back wasn't positive. The league did an incredible job. Incredible. I mean, if you're on the freeway and you can see a wreck on your car, on your phone, like 5 miles up, you can take exits to it. If you're driving and an 18-wheeler next to you falls in front of you and you end up getting into the car wreck, that's what the NBA dealt with. Pandemic, now deal with it, figure it out. Well, we didn't even know how to test. We thought if you touched surfaces in your kitchen, you'd get it. Nobody knew anything, and they're dealing with it live, real time. NFL got a huge break, 7 months to watch all the mistakes. So for LeBron to jump on the bandwagon now and say, I told you so, it's not good optics. That's not what you do. You don't jump on and say, I told you so. Listen, we all have our told you so moments, right? It's fun, right? Like to be right. But if you look at what they have done, think about what restaurants in America did. It didn't matter if you were black, white, conservative, liberal, rural, city. It didn't matter. Old, young, we all dealt with this in real time. It's hard. I mean, California literally overnight changed a rule. You can get cocktails to go. Restaurants in cold cities. Let's eat outdoors. And these restaurateurs, 9 of 10 made it. We're all in this thing together. Don't be a I told you so guy in the pandemic. I don't want to hear that. Let the cable companies and all the experts tell you. They knew everything. We've all been just trying to get through this nightmare for 19, 18 months. Overwhelmingly, restaurateurs, states, senators, congresspeople, commissioners did a really incredibly admirable job to get through this mess. And the NBA, I mean, at least baseball usually starts in April. NFL starts in September. NBA's halfway through the season. Pandemic takes over the country. And they got a season in with no tests in a bubble. No positive tests. It's amazing. And this year, they were hemorrhaging money. They had to get back on the court. They had to play. Otherwise, the owners get all the power and the players don't. And Adam Silver had to negotiate that constantly. He's fighting with the Players Association people. The owners are yelling at him. The owners all have their own agendas. The networks are yelling at him. The ratings are going down. The banks are yelling at Adam Silver. This is not a time to say, I told you so. If you knew what Joy and I and this company have been going through for 18 months, just next week, I don't have to do 3 nose tests a day. Next week, I'm down to 1. Okay? Still masks everywhere. I don't see bosses for months. We're all Zoom calling it. I get I told you so. I've had I told you so moments. We all have them. Can we all just stop it during the pandemic? We all got through this thing. It's been brutal. Let's just root for each other. Let's just get through this thing. I didn't like that. That was the LeBron I wasn't a big fan of. So there you go. I'll be nice for the next 10 months, but I didn't like that. Not a fan of it. All right. Jason Terry, I'm a fan of. 19 NBA seasons, a champ, a sixth man of the year. The Jet. Jason Terry is now joining us live. By the way, you know, it's funny. When you get these guys, you've been playing in the league so long, Jet. It's funny. You have had, just to name your coaches, you've had Doc Rivers, Rick Carlisle, Terry Stotts, Jason Kidd. You've played with Giannis and Harden and Dirk and Kevin Garnett and Chris Middleton and Paul Pierce. You have had so many experiences in your NBA career. But do you ever remember something like Philadelphia where the star point guard appears to be terrified of the free throw line? I don't know how you solve it. I mean, when you're watching Philadelphia, what do you do if you're the Sixers going forward?
Well, going forward, you have to figure out how to make him confident. I mean, when you talk about free throw shooting, right? We all have the ability to shoot free throws, but there's the innate ability to make free throws and then make them when the pressure's on the line. One, you got to look at his form and technique. Okay, is there that? It doesn't seem like it's a technical issue. This is all between the ears. It's all psychological. There has to be someone on that staff or within that organization that can calm his nerves when he goes up to the line. I mean, it's easier said than done, but I mean, one thing is repetition. That's how we all get great. But the second thing is his psychological warfare that he's having within himself. He has to get up there, relax, block out everything, and just knock them down. They're free. The last time I checked.
Yeah. That's a good point. Jason Terry joining us. So, you know, it's really interesting. It's a younger league than it's ever been. Lucas starring, Trae Young, Zion. Trae Young is fascinating because he came into this league, Jason, and people said he can't defend. He's frail. He's too small. He led college basketball in turnovers. And you look up and you're like, he's what everybody in the league wants. Confident. Go-getter, knock him to the floor, great shooter. The first time you saw Trae Young, did you buy into it? I mean, because I went and looked this morning at a draft, the draft analysis of it, and there were a lot more weaknesses than strengths. and I'm watching him just take this series over. Are you surprised at all by him?
Well, one thing as a former assistant GM with the Legends in the G League in Frisco is that when you evaluate talent, you got to look at the guy that lines up. And when I looked at Trae Young at the University of Oklahoma, right away I could see the at which he played the pace of the game. I knew he was a pro. And then when you watched his ability to create plays and make certain reads out of pick and roll situations, you knew he had things that would make him special. And then you add the range at which he shoots the ball with and the confidence. Now you're talking about superstar potential. Then you fast forward. You go to his career at the Atlanta Hawks. Okay, first year, yeah, it's a little rough. It's a little rocky. He's a rookie. But now he's seen all the competition. He understands how to play within the system and then how to get his game off. And when he does it with flair. He does it with dramatic. And he's confident. To have the confidence to go out in a playoff game and lead your team to victory in the opposing team's arena – I'm talking about in Madison Square Garden on the biggest stage. I mean, this kid is a superstar. I'm so happy for him. I started my career in 99 in Atlanta, was drafted by them, never played a playoff game in that uniform. But I know it's special not only for him, his teammates, but for the city of Atlanta. It's a football town, baseball town. But now the Hawks are making it their own.
Jason Terry, the Jet, joining us. He's at University of Arizona, beautiful Tucson, Arizona. My buddy Jed Fish is the football coach, so I'm all in on the Wildcats, great university. You know, Luka, a story today, not happy in Dallas. Zion, a story today, not happy with New Orleans. You have a lifetime of NBA experience. What would you tell Zion and Luka this morning if you could sit them down? Should they want to be out if they sense dysfunction? Should they stay and deal with it? You can waste a lot of years in this league, Jason, if you get the wrong owner, the wrong GM, or the wrong coach. What would you say to Luka and Zion, who are both like kids and both stars and both very unhappy?
Well, the one thing that they have to understand because of the age at which they're at, and you know they only been in the league for a small sample size, you got to engulf yourself in what can you do to make yourself better? What can you do to help yourself? If you start to get entrenched in the business of basketball and ownership and management and trying to manipulate and put this coach or that teammate here or there, then you're going to lose a part of what makes you great. When you watch Luka Doncic and Zion play, these guys are phenomenal. They're game changers, I like to call them. And, you know, they're cornerstones of a franchise. And right now, at this particular point of their career, it's about developing their own skill set and getting better. I mean, if you look at Luka Doncic, where does he have room to go? You got to look at his physique and the physical nature of how he's designed and wired. Zion's very similar. I mean, he's muscular, he's strong, but there has to be an endurance factor that he's going to have to go through so he can play a rigorous amount of season and then, you know, have some postseason success. So, you know, for me, it's about them looking within themselves and seeing how they can be better to help the franchise and not what the franchise can do for them, because it's still too early. Now, once they get up into their years of Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and LeBron James, then you can start to look at the business side of basketball and think about management and where you would like to go. But I'm telling you, the grass is not always greener on the other side. And those two franchises are positioned right now where they can be the cornerstone and they can have a long, luxurious career. With Luka, he just got to look at Dirk. You know, Dirk was there for 1 year with him. And if he looks at him and allows him to mentor him, he can own that city. The city of Dallas is his.
Jason, you know, the reality, basketball is a unique culture. If I'm scoring, you're not. If I'm a quarterback and I throw a touchdown pass, I get credit for the pass. You get credit for the touchdown catch. We both hit a bonus. And the left tackle gets credit for blocking. He hits a bonus. In basketball, I'm scoring, you're not. And nobody that has a lot of assists get paid. It's a scorer's league. And I look at Brooklyn and I say, man, this thing is, it's going to be hot, but it may burn out fast. Are you surprised that here's Brooklyn, they've got control of the series, three stars, two are hurt, and it's just kind of, and Steve Nash has never coached. Are you surprised it's kind of worked with all the big personalities thrown together?
Not surprised whatsoever. When you're talking about the Brooklyn Nets and you look at Kevin Durant, like, it's hard to say he's underrated, but when you listen to all these talk shows and all these analysts, I mean, he's kind of underrated. Like, they don't give Kevin Durant nearly enough credit. He takes way too much flack for leaving Oklahoma City when he did, right, and leaving and joining Steph Curry. He wanted to be a champion, and he understood if he went to Golden State, he could make his dreams a reality. He did that, and now later on in his career, he wants to be a champion again. He wants to etch his name in stone as one of the greatest players to ever play this game. And with that performance the other night, I hate to be a guy that says, like, I'm going to judge a guy off one game. But if you watch that performance, like, there was literally nothing the Milwaukee Bucks could do. I know they talked about putting Giannis on him. Okay, put Giannis on him. I mean, LeBron James couldn't guard him in the NBA Finals. So you want to put Giannis on him? Go ahead. Kevin Durant is one of the greatest scorers, and forget scoring, basketball players that I've ever seen. And you got to remember, on our road to a championship, we're just so grateful and fortunate that Kevin Durant was just a young tyke when we went to Oklahoma City.
Listen, a lot of people are saying there's a bunch of injuries. It's because the NBA rushed back. But of the players that have been hurt so far this year, AD, Embiid, Kawhi, Kyrie, Chris Paul, Nurkic, Mike Conley, it's a lot of dudes that get hurt. I mean, it's these are guys that have been hurt before. I talked to Gary Payton the other day about this, and he said, you know, he goes, I played 80 games a year, and I had to guard bigger guys, and the league didn't have, we didn't have, like, the treatment. We didn't have the trainers. He said, but in the end, I played hurt, and that was the reality of it. He said, but players didn't have the power. So, I mean, the coaching staffs would be on you. You were lifting three hours a day. As players have gotten more power, nobody's going to tell a star player he's got to sit in the weight room for 2.5 hours. And Gary's argument was players now are more skilled than they've ever been. But the reality is the weight training, the practices, the players have more power now. Some of this is guys break down because, that you know, Anthony Davis, they don't put the time in the room, the off-season room. Your thought on all the injuries to all the stars, is there one reason, two reasons? What's your guess?
Well, I got to believe, and I'm old school, and I played 19 years and only have, you know, I would even call it a major injury, kind of like a knee clean out towards the end of my career. But I think because these guys in the off seasons, they have these maintenance programs. You know, the off season is built to design to push your body to limits that you wouldn't ordinarily go to. So then when you get to the rigors of the seasons, you know, the dog days of January or the postseason when you're deep into May, into June, when you get late into the finals and you're trying to make a push, make a run, everybody's banged up. But if you've pushed yourself to those limits in the off season, then your body is more susceptible to being to be able to handle, you know, that type of pounding and those type of rigors. And you don't have those soft tissue type injuries. And so, again, you got to go to these people are so smart now with trying to, what do you want to call it, game manage or, you know, manage these guys' minutes throughout the season. Sometimes you got to go through it to get to it. And I think there's a toughness factor to it. But then again, everybody has a different body type. And so I never was the type of guy to criticize someone on if, you know, their pain threshold, so to speak. I was tough. I was a guy that, man, I wanted to play. I'd have to be physically dead not to go out there and lace them up, especially in the biggest moments of the season. I got to give James Harden a lot of credit because I know hamstrings are sensitive. And he's not going to be the type of player that how dynamic he is with a hamstring type injury. But he got out there. He willed himself to even be out there in the lineup. So you got to take your hat off to James. And it was good to see.
Jason Terry, finally, you played with Giannis before your career ended. He's a terrific kid. There's things he can do. He is a bit of a liability late in games because of free throws. Have we been unrealistic in our expectations? Or I mean, I look at him and I just think, okay, this is what he is. He's great defensively, very long. He plays bully ball. But, you know, outside of 4 feet, he shoots about 33%. He's not the face of the league. He's not LeBron. Let's stop comparing him to great players. He's a tremendous kid, a winning basketball player, but there is a ceiling here. He can be marginalized. You push him away from the basket, he's not the same guy. Do you buy into that, or do you think he's scratching the surface? Or, I mean, where are you on Giannis today?
Well, I spent a lot of time with Giannis in his development in Milwaukee my last 2 years of my career. And, you know, watching him, his work ethic and his ability, you know, to pass the ball from all different angles. And then just the uniqueness of his size and his athleticism. I mean, he's just now scratching the surface of what he's going to be. And I think, you know, at some time when you're a young superstar going through this league, there has to be failure along the way. And he's going to continue to, you know, have his ups and downs, his bumps and bruises, and he'll go through it. But at the end of the day, I mean, he will realize his championship dreams. I don't know if it's going to be this year, because when you look at what he's facing, I mean, Kevin Durant, if James Harden's out there, Kyrie, I mean, it's just a tough, tough role to hold. And again, as a coach, as a staff, we have to figure out ways to utilize Giannis without him bringing the ball up as a point forward. I mean, we have to play him in the post where he has an advantage, or in pick and roll situations where Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton are the ball handlers, and we can use Giannis as a roller, put him in the middle of the defense. He can make any pass from there. And like you said, his biggest skill set is 2 feet in the paint, and nobody's going to stop him. So, you know, just from a strategical standpoint, utilizing them a little bit different. But then at the end of the day, guys still have to make shots. Guys still have to make plays. And I just think right now, I mean, they have a huge opportunity tonight in game 6 at home, where they play well and they shoot the ball well. But then if they win this one, they still got to go back into Brooklyn. And that's a tough place to play.
Jason Terry, great seeing you. Continued success. Assistant coach with the Arizona Wildcats in Tucson. Good talking to you, my man. Appreciate you stopping by.
Appreciate you. What's up, Joy? We didn't give you no love. Good to see you.
Hi, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Giannis is, in a perfect world, if you had a point guard that could run the show. Let's say Chris Paul played with Giannis. It would solve a lot of the issues. Because
well,
he would be.
Chris Paul solves a lot of issues.
Yeah,
for a lot
I mean,
of people.
But if you had Chris with him, all of a sudden you're like, oh, then you wouldn't need Giannis out there jacking threes. Sometimes with Milwaukee, you know, they get into a situation. I always feel like I'm banging on Wisconsin teams, but it's like. Sometimes with Giannis and this team is he doesn't really have a natural two, and so it puts him into a position where we're asking him to do things he's not really built to do. Like Ben Simmons, we can all bail on him, but he's a 6'11 point guard with great vision, great strength, finishes at the rim, best defensive guard in the league. You can't bail on him. You're paying him too much money. Like, sometimes you just – we're asking players to do things they're not – like, I am not a play-by-play guy. I've done it, but I'm a talker. I'm an opinionist. I'm a generalist. Well, don't ask me to do analyst work on a college football game. I'll give you opinions, but I'm not going to break down. That's not
well,
what that's
it might be a little bit of the LeBron effect, because he is so
everything.
Able to do everything.
We think we everybody
start,
can.
Yeah, we start comparing everyone to him, which is unfair to LeBron and to everyone else. And so maybe that is part of it. And especially when you have bigger guys, you automatically think, OK, well, LeBron does it. Why can't you do it?
We didn't ask Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to shoot threes. I mean, when you watch Giannis, his body type, I mean, I was watching that video, it reminds me of like Lou Alcindor at UCLA. It's like he has a generationally unique body type. And we just said, Kareem, go hit skyhooks and defend.
Well, that's a matter of putting the right pieces around that, those
exactly.
players rather than forcing them to be something that they're not.
But with Giannis, because that's my point, is that we want everybody to be everything. Ben Simmons is not a shooter. Move on. As long as he can shoot free throws, okay. You're asking Giannis to shoot threes. We didn't ask our bigs to do that. Instead, he's a dominant player down low. He's a dominant defensive player. He's a dominant offensive player. Not everybody's going to be able to shoot a three. Like it, when sometimes, a new rule, if you're 7 feet, you're probably not going to be Kevin Durant. He's a historic outlier.
Right. Well, that's the problem, is that we keep pushing everybody to be these outliers rather than just looking at outliers at what they as what they are. Lean into what you're great at.
Just double down on what you're great at. If you're great at the skyhook.
But the organizations have to lean into what they're great at, too. Like, if they know that that's a specific type of player that's great at something, lean into that and compensate for that by building the roster around them.
Every time I see Giannis take a three, it's cringy. It doesn't look good. Like it just does. Trae Young shoots a three. It's just natural. You know what I mean? Like,
well, I think it's nice to have, you know, in your bag to be able to pull up every once in a while, but it shouldn't be something that you're relying on happening in order to win.
I'm not even sure if it should be in Giannis's bag. What does he shoot from three-point land? I'm not even sure they should worry about. Why even put it in his bag? It's not like a golfer where you have to be able to hit a 5-iron, a 7-iron, a wedge, and a fairway wood. Like a golfer, you got to do it all. He shoots 30% from three. Like, stop shooting it. Like, Russell Westbrook. Stop making him a three-point shooter. That's not what he does. Like, we're always trying to make young people into everything. Just hire people at what they're great at and let them just own their space. Because LeBron can do everything. The Swiss Army knife, yeah. We're all like, everybody. People forget Michael Jordan didn't have much shooting range. Michael wasn't really great from the three-point line. Michael was never a brilliant passer. What Michael was the best on-ball defender, the greatest scorer. Michael wasn't everything. Magic wasn't a great shooter. Magic wasn't a great defender. It's like we live in a society now where everybody's got to be a Swiss Army knife. Just give me somebody who's great at something. Just I don't need Dame to be a great defender. He is the best shot maker with Steph Curry in the world. I'm good. That's it. I'm good. I'm not going to ask him to post. We don't ask the guards to post. Why do we ask the bigs to shoot threes?
I mean, I think you can be competent at everything, but lean into what you're great at.
I'm not competent at everything. I'm not. I am like really good at maybe one thing, and the rest of it's a barnyard musical. Wolf and Shepherd is a dress shoe made and worn by athletes. Their founder is a former track athlete and designer who brought athletic shoe innovation to dress shoes, inventing the crossover. Wolf and Shepherd's crossover is business meets athletic shoe. You get the full grain Italian leather and the athletic agile sole. You'll see, by the way, during these NBA games, you'll see those white-soled shoes. Those are Wolf and Shepherd. Steve Nash wears them during games for the Brooklyn Nets. Join the pack I did. They have great merchandise. Wolf and Shepherd. Exclusive 10% discounts with the promo code HERD. Visit wolfandshepherd.com, wolfandshepherd.com. You go on a long walk. Let's say you're in a city. You got a 20-minute walk to a meeting. These are not dress shoes that hurt. They're stylish. They're comfortable. They're like an athletic dress shoe. I absolutely love them, Wolf and Shepherd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Saturday on FS1, it's showtime. Catch Shohei Ohtani as he looks to continue his dominant season for the Angels when they take on the Tigers. Saturday at 10 Eastern on FS1 in the Fox Sports app.
Another Aaron Rodgers story out today. A general manager calls him selfish. A lot of stuff going on in the world today. There's a lot. It's great. You know,
it's been a very crazy week.
I was telling the staff during the break that politics and sports, if you're an opinion person, are great businesses to be in for the next 10 years. Reason being is Trump, in a weird way, opened up the opportunity for other wacko candidates. Like, the country made it through. So there's going to be other candidates that we roll our eyes at, a lot of us. I'll say myself, I won't speak for anybody else. But it opens the doors up for, you're seeing people run for office now that wouldn't even have been taken seriously a decade ago. So it's good to be in the opinion business about politics. Same with sports. As all these players make more money and get more power and control and want it, there's going to be more holdouts, more I'm not doing this, you're not telling me what to do, and it's going to create more mayhem. It's good to be in the sports opinion business. Like when leagues have too much control over players, there's very little drama. But when players have a say, they're human beings. Human beings who make a lot of money have egos, right? Human beings who have a lot of talent have egos, and they can push back. And this pushback stuff with Aaron Rodgers, with Luka and with Zion, it fills my show every day. It's fun to talk about. That's why, you know, it's you got to give the artist, you got to give him a little space. Aaron Rodgers, a little bit of an artist. Luka's a little bit of an artist. You got to give the artist space. The artist doesn't have the accountant's brain. The accountant can eat oatmeal every day and be happy. The artist wants squid for breakfast once a week. So athletes are artists. They're performers. They're entertainers. We understand that, right? If a painter was a little crazy, we'd be like, well, he's a painter. He's out there.
It's his process.
It's his process. He's a mime. He doesn't talk. He plays on wall. You know, we let artists have all this space because we get their artists. Well, so are athletes. They're performers. Every night, a comedian goes on stage and performs in front of 10,000 people. Every night, a basketball player or a football player, they go into a stadium where we all cheer and boo them. You don't think that plays with your psyche? You don't think look how great Giannis is. He's terrified of the free throw line. Look how great Ben Simmons is, terrified of the free throw line. When you go to work in your cubicle, what if 1,000 people were judging everything you did? Oh, Sarah, you're terrible. I love Sarah. I love. You don't think that plays on you? These are kids. So you're seeing in these NBA playoffs, you're seeing players shrink, explode. Trae Young's exploding. Ja Morant exploded. And then Giannis is shrinking. And Embiid, these are artists. This whole thing with Luka and Zion, just be happy with the money you make. They don't work at factories. That's not what we got here. We got the world's most talented basketball artists. I mean, the logo is a former player. The logo in the NFL is a shield. In the NBA, it's a player. The baseball logo is not a player. The hockey logo is not a player. NBA logo is a dude. A dude who has many times said, you need a new dude on the logo. I'm an old dude. Get me off the logo. So the basketball, what we're really seeing is just humanity at its greatest and its most vulnerable, and players are shrinking and they're elevating. I'm fascinated by it. I am fascinated by what I'm watching. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, let's talk about one of those artists, Zion. So the Pelicans let go of head coach Stan Van Gundy after just one season with the team. But finding a new coach is not the only issue the team is facing right now. According to The Athletic, some of Zion's family members want him to go to a different team because of New Orleans' failures to put the right pieces around him. So this is why I wanted to do a little digging, because we talk about this all the time. We were just talking about it with Luka, and most guys take the rookie extension, right? Because it's a whole lot of money.
A bunch.
So is it possible that Luka or Zion would consider not taking that? So the sooner Luka's a little further along, but the soonest that Zion can reach the unrestricted free agency is the 2024 season. So that would require him passing on the long-term contract extension with the Pelicans to take a one-year qualifying offer in 2023. So I'm not going to bother you with all the percentages, but assuming that Zion wants to play out his rookie contract, he would sacrifice over $50 million in guaranteed money.
Okay, so that's a lot. Nobody's disputing that. But could he make that back as a Laker or a Knick or a Bull or a Maverick? By the way, now I know it's football, but look at what Dak has made. Okay, the world, folks, is changing on this stuff. So there are YouTube people making eight figures a year. The money, there are people making $100,000 a tweet. So it's a different game now. Like, I do think, like Chris Broussard said, he could sign an extension for a year.
Yes, he could sign that one-year deal. Yeah, I mean, it is something to consider if you're truly that unhappy and you have that little bit amount of faith in the organization.
Think about this, Joy. So basketball players have always had the advantage. You get paid for your game, and then you get paid for your shoes.
Yes.
There is now a third revenue stream for pro athletes, social media.
Yeah.
So this is the mobility. Like, LeBron could, if he wanted to, LeBron could make, he doesn't really advertise a lot on his space. LeBron could make $10 million a year on his Instagram and his Twitter. So now we've added a third. It's almost like in our business. Now there's money for Joy and I on radio and TV and podcasting.
Yeah.
So we've added a revenue stream for pro athletes. Trust me on this. Zion can make the money back over his career.
So it's the guaranteed part, obviously, right, that is daunting. And in the past, this is what has kept most players in their rookie contract is that, how are you going to make that up? To your point, there's so many revenue streams. And if you go to a market like New York, not that I'm encouraging that,
right,
but if you go to a market like New York or LA, or to your point, maybe even Dallas, I mean, you're talking about advertisements and visibility that is
global.
It's just global. Yeah, it's not comparable. And that's not to bang on New Orleans, because as I said earlier, New Orleans is a city that can sustain a huge brand. They have the Saints, they have Drew Brees, who's an instant Hall of Famer. Like, they've had huge names there and they can do it. But that's a different organization. Can the Pelicans do it? That is the question. So it's not about the city, because New Orleans is a very popular city, it is a big enough city, and it has shown it can sustain a big brand.
Think about this. The Knicks were not only pretty average this year, they were boring unless you lived in New York. And look how big the Knicks got overnight. They got destroyed in the first round. Julius Randle was their star. Look at how big the Knicks got in a minute. Okay, can you imagine if the Knicks were as good as the Jazz or the Suns or the Clippers. That's all we would talk about on my show.
Yeah.
Because it would be massive ratings because New Yorkers would want to talk about it.
And not just New Yorkers, it's just an international brand.
Yeah.
So Ben Simmons' free throw issues continued in last night's Game 5 loss. He went 4 for 14 from the line. And after the game, he spoke about his struggles and being kept out of the game in the fourth because of it.
Definitely, I think mental. We were up. We had it. And I think we just gave it to him. We got too comfortable. Now, obviously, I got to knock down free throws and step up and do that. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, coach's decision.
Joel Embiid and Seth Curry were the only Sixers to make a basket in the second half.
Giannis's free throws look awful. Not to be a basketball coach here, can I just offer a little advice to Ben Simmons? Bend your knees a little more. There's times he looks stiff. His shot doesn't look terrible. But see there, his legs.
He isn't bending his knees. That's,
bend your knees.
That might be part of it.
That Colin, I offer these seminars on free throw shooting. I won a third place trophy in high school on free throws. You got to bend your knees. He gets too stiff.
Well, he's stiff because he's mentally not there. Like, he's struggling with something mentally. We've seen this happen with athletes before. You get a little bit of a tick. I mean, obviously, the free throw line has been a problem for lots of people throughout the history of the NBA. This isn't new. It's just frustrating because you feel like this should be something that as an NBA player of this caliber, you should be able to figure out. But the mental side of sports is massive. Like, it's very understated how much you have to be prepared mentally and get over these things, especially during the course of an important game.
Good stuff, Joy, with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Live News.
Well, Aaron Rodgers gets picked on by an NFL exec. That next. The White House has issued alerts against increased ransomware attacks, urging all organizations and people, protect your business, protect your software. They can encrypt files, look up your devices. Ransom is demanded in exchange for the release of data and restored operations. Every day we put our stuff out there, it's scary. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. They detect it, you're compromised, they send you an immediate alert from a domestic agent. Just try to keep what's yours, yours, with LifeLock by Norton. Right now, rare deal, 25% off your first year. You just have to use my name in the promo, HERD, H-E-R-D. LifeLock.com, put in code HERD, or call 1-800-LIFELOCK, HERD. You're getting all sorts of these attacks. Identity theft is a mess. It'll screw up your credit. It can screw up your taxes. Screw up. I mean, you'll be spinning if you don't take this stuff seriously. LifeLock.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Good things come to those who wait at Jersey Mike's. They come to those who don't. Download the app, order ahead, skip the line now through June 20th. Use the code THEHERD, a buck off your order, Jersey Mike. So, Jay Glazer, there's a couple different things. Jay Glazer said this yesterday about Aaron Rodgers on the Pat McAfee show. Here's this piece of tape.
I know he still wants out, without a doubt. Absolutely. Still wants out. Every time somebody called the Packers, it was immediately shut down. So, look, what these teams need to do is continue to call and continue to call.
By the way, Pat McAfee's losing weight. Random thought. Secondly, there's an article from Matt Lombardo. Don't know him. Works for Fanside. And he talked to a former NFL GM that said, Aaron's selfish. Guys don't like him. It's about Aaron. They all deal with him because he's a superstar. He helps guys make money, put food on the table for the kids, and people respect him for that. Multiple sources around the NFL, according to the article, believe what's most likely to happen at first. Rodgers stays away through training camp. Jordan Love gets the reps, game speed reps, practices, and then eventually they bring Aaron back. You know, one of the things about this is, you know, Fox has a huge NFL package. So when I criticize players, I don't want to get personal. Like Baker Mayfield, most of my stuff overwhelmingly is tongue-in-cheek. I hated when he called out his medical staff. I said he was a jerk. That's a little personal, but I thought he was. You know, with Aaron, hey, I don't want to be personal with Aaron. I've been critical of Aaron before. I think it's reasonable. You have so many different people saying the same thing. How about if I just say this? Tom Brady is easy. Aaron's hard. Aaron's hard. He's a harder personality. Tom takes pay cuts. Tom appears to have a happier home life. Tom has a big family. Tom lives in a world of sacrifice. When you're young, good-looking, rich, and single, you're not going to make as many sacrifices. When you're older, more experienced, you're married, you have kids, she has a great career, your kids are growing. Married people's lives are a little more sacrifice-based. Young, single, rich, good-looking people, they're kind of doing their own thing when they want to do it. I think Aaron's a little harder. Now, they're very similar in that they're both endorsement kings. They're both Hall of Famers. They both have three MVPs. They're both the classic franchise, good-looking quarterback. There's a lot they have in common. There's a story in the Washington Post last year that I think really speaks to Tom Brady. And I think this is fair. So the story in the Washington Post is they were talking about Tom. He does something with every single person he ever meets for the first time. Four words. He walks up and goes, "Hi, I'm Tom Brady." So what Tom is really doing, he knows you know he's Tom Brady. What is he doing? I want you to think about this for a second. What is Tom doing there? No, he's doing something. It's smart. I'll give you another second. Tom is telling you, "I'm not better than you. Hi, I'm Tom Brady. I'm not going to presume you're intimidated or know who I am." It's Tom's greatest gift. It's not his arm. It's not his body. Tom's ability to, as he's grown in stature and wealth, "Hi, I'm Tom Brady." He is telling you, "I'm one of you." Aaron's vibe tends to be a little, "I'm better than you." And he is usually. But I think Brady's gift is that Tom, for his stature, is pretty damn easy. He's kind of a coach on the field, takes pay cuts, gets along. "Hi, I'm Tom Brady." That's why he ages well. That style ages well. Hour three next.